Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Ride Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. So excited today. Today we're going to have a rundown of the Republican National Convention, what happened, what I liked, what I didn't like, and what this means for the 2020 race. So without further ado, let's jump into my monologue and I'll see you on the other side. So the conventions are over. The Republicans just finished their convention yesterday, August 27th. Last speaker was President Trump officially accepting the nomination for president. And the theme of this year's convention for the Republicans was honoring the great American story. And over 4 days, they honored different aspects of that American story. Day one was all about the land of promise. Day two was about the land of opportunity. Wednesday, land of heroes. Thursday, land of greatness. So it was interesting to have that different theme guiding the presentation of speakers every night. And I think it made an impact. First off, let's talk about the setting of the convention. We all know because of COVID-19, we got these more infomercial-like conventions from both Democrats and Republicans. Obviously, the traditional convention setting of the large crowds and the big auditorium and the parties and all the celebrations are not feasible at the time. But both parties were successful in being able to pull something off that was presentable and did a good to moderate job conveying their message to the American people. I thought the Republicans were especially successful in conveying that message within this more limited framework. They decided to use a specific location in DC. They had these beautiful Greek columns, very colonial, very majestic, very Washington, D.C., center of power aesthetic to it that really went well for all these speakers. And I think it was very well utilized. And there was some criticism for the use of this imagery because we had a lot of images of D.C., a lot of images of national monuments. So historically, Trump has always portrayed himself as an outsider, somebody who's trying to drain the swamp. And here at the Republican convention, he's using that imagery of the establishment, of power, of to convey to the American people this sort of inspirational image. But I think it's more than appropriate considering the times we're living in. Guys, you have to remember, all summer, monuments have been defaced, vandalized, destroyed. There is a sentiment out there, and this was something Trump talked about during his 4th of July speech and his speech at Mount Vernon. There's a lack of respect for our history. There's a lack of respect for our national treasures. And by the RNC deciding to use that imagery, it's elevating our history. It's elevating our monuments. It's elevating that part of our history that is being attacked right now. And these riots all over the country, which have now produced even violent incidents that have cost American lives, these things are worrisome. And the RNC was very strategic in trying to bring not only speakers that were everyday Americans, not celebrities like the Dems, but everyday Americans that could speak to the soul of America and could talk about things that are everyday life related. Not about these blanket statements about social justice and reforms without concrete platform ideas attached to them, but actual life people living, breathing, that have experienced hardship and have been able to progress beyond that hardship due to President Trump's policies. That is a very big contrast to what the Democrats did last week. And I'm not just saying because of the celebrity component that was a very big thing on the Democratic side, but we are seeing a Republican Party that has embraced kind of these blue-collar values. These are not the country club Republicans anymore of years past. This is definitely a very different party, a bigger tent party. The amount of diversity at this convention cannot be overstated. We had people from all walks of life, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, Black Americans. It was a full spectrum of different experiences, different backgrounds, all in this very majestic setting, supporting President Trump for his re-election. It was very effective. I especially think that using everyday Americans to tell Trump's story as president is much more persuasive than having, for example, a politician up there and saying all the good things that Trump has done in his 4 years. There was, of course, some of that has to be. You had Nikki Haley, you had Tim Scott, Senator, only Republican senator right now, currently in office. So you had those figures there telling the story, telling the policy story. But it was the human factor, it was the human story aspect of the presentation that was much more impactful. And I think you will see a lot of positive movement in the polls for Trump after this speech. Now, let's talk about the controversial parts of the convention, specifically President Trump using the White House as the setting for some of these very powerful moments. And I know if you're a liberal out there, your head is probably exploding after this week because time and time again, Trump used the White House as a setting for this. But there is a lot of concern that this may be a violation of the Hatch Act. For those of you who are not familiar with the Hatch Act sets very strict regulations on how the White House can be used for political purposes. So there's an argument by some that Trump violated the Hatch Act by hosting that naturalization ceremony and recording it for purposes of the convention, recording the pardoning of the individual at the White House for the convention, and also delivering his acceptance speech on the lawn of the White House. So there's concern that there's a violation of the Hatch Act, but here's the reality of it. We're living in a COVID world. That's where he lives. And I'm pretty sure it's better for him to deliver those speeches and record those segments at the White House, much more safer from a health perspective. And I think that's an important thing to note. If we are living in these unprecedented times, it's necessary to take unprecedented measures. There were images of Biden at his convention from his home, because that's the environment we're all confined to. For those of us who are lucky enough to be or still have a job and be able to go to work, it's kind of two locations that we spend our time in, work and home, work and home. And if you're the president of the United States, your work is at your house. That's kind of what you do, your heavy lifting. So I think that's a disingenuous argument and it ignores the reality of today. What I think is really at issue is how effective the imagery was, and those criticizing the president are mad because of that, because it was incredibly effective. The majesty of the White House is something that is so revered by Americans. It's something that leaves a very grand impression on anybody who's watching. And Trump is a showman. You have to give it to him. His time in reality television have really focused and elevated the presentation of the RNC. And this happened in 2016, and it definitely happened now. I personally enjoyed this convention more than I did in 2016. I thought it was very well put together. I thought it was executed very well. I thought that the programming made sense. And again, the imagery, the use of our national monuments, beautiful, just so persuasive. Now, let's get to how the Republican Party has changed, because you cannot watch the RNC convention without having, you know, a light bulb moment and realizing, wow, you have seen a realignment of a political party. As most of you know, my first election that I was really active in was McCain-Palin. And the platform and the Republican Party of McCain-Palin is very different from the platform and the makeup of the Republican Party of today. And I think that that transition has occurred for multiple factors. One factor is definitely Donald J. Trump. His personality, his platform, his approach to politics has changed. Who is attracted to the Republican Party? Who now considers themselves a Republican? two notable absences at the convention tell you the whole story as far as how much the party has changed. The only living Republican president, George W. Bush, was not present, nor was the former Republican nominee in 2012, which was Mitt Romney. Both men were absent at the convention and were nowhere to be seen. Surprising? Of course not. Both families, the Romneys and the Bushes, have been critical of the president. Romney, a senator from Utah, has been a complete and utter disappointment. As somebody who voted for Romney, who was boots on the ground for Romney, knocking on doors, making phone calls for him during his election, presidential bid, what a disappointment. Literally the most disappointing progression of a public figure in modern history. As a Republican, I reject that label for him. He's not a Republican anymore. He's following in the same footsteps of John McCain. And that's not a very good example to follow, with all due respect. Again, I was boots on the ground for John McCain before I could even vote. Knocking on doors, making phone calls for him. I couldn't vote for him in the election, yet I was volunteering because I believed in his campaign at the time. And again, his progression was a total disappointment. Both men failed to stand up for conservative values. Both men folded at the first instance of resistance from the left. And as a conservative, as a woman, as a lifelong Republican, their attitude and their approach to politics was always unsatisfying. Fast forward to Trump, and we have a new political figure, and both men disliked immensely. And for Romney, it's personal. And for John McCain, may have been a little bit of jealousy involved. So John McCain has since passed, and may he rest in peace. But we cannot ignore the progression of the party. And he was part of that progression. And instead of guiding the party in one direction, I actually think he accelerated it towards what it is now, which is a very Trumpian political party. And honestly, the fact that the party did not embrace a new platform, they just this year embraced, you know, the nomination of President Trump and left it at that, tells you that there is this cult of personality, very similar to the cult of personality that dominated the Democrat Party during the Obama years, where it's not so much loyalty to party that's at issue, it's more loyalty to the nominee, in this case President Trump, in the Democrats' case President Obama. So I think it's interesting to see this resurgence of populism in the Republican and Democratic parties in recent years, a sort of populism that really has not been at the forefront of any political campaign for over a century. And it's very interesting. I'll tell you this. I know a lot of country club Republicans that are really upset about this change, that they there's a lot of people that have joined the Republican Party since Trump that would not have been considered desirable by these country club Republicans that were the establishment types. And I know those people firsthand. These are the people that are elitist, that are part of the party not because they actually believe in those values, but because they're trying to leverage some advantage out of that affiliation. And they're not there for the right reasons. They're as much as part of the swamp as the DC politicians. So it's an interesting transition. It's an interesting progression of American politics. And let's talk about Trump's acceptance speech, because wow, I was watching that and it was incredible. It was very well drafted. He delivered it very well. And a much more contained Trump, a much more more middle of the road Trump, let's call it that. Not as salacious or inflammatory, but him delivering that speech on the lawn of the White House with a nice group of people in front of him, socially distanced. My understanding is that they were also tested for COVID before they could be there in the audience. And delivering that beautiful speech, he was introduced by his daughter Ivanka, and what a pleasure it must be for him to have a daughter that is that eloquent and loyal. And that just says a lot about him as a father and as a family man. But the speech that he delivered, amazing. Probably his best speech to date. I think I put it right up there with the speech that he delivered at Mount Vernon. It had that sort of appeal to me. And folks, if we keep with this type of rhetoric and presentation and narrative, liberals are going to be crying the day after the election, because you can't beat this stuff. Some call it propaganda, some call it persuasion, but the way that Trump is running the campaign and his messaging right now, it's amazing. I literally got chills watching that speech. I had never seen anything like it. I'm 28 years old. I'm a student of politics, follow it avidly, and I have never seen anything even remotely close to what Trump did last night. It was amazing. And I really want to encourage all of you who have not seen it to go out and see it and judge it for yourself. I will give Democrats credit when it's due. One of the best presidential acceptance speeches at a convention, I think, was Obama's speech in 2008. That speech was very majestic. He was surrounded by Roman columns. At the time, Republicans mocked that, like he was some kind of Greek god and the Messiah jokes and all of that. But that was a powerful speech. And I think he won, not solely because of the speech, but because of the narrative surrounding him. And Trump is doing something similar this time around. And it's there. People are excited. The enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats this year is quite significant. And I think the Democrats know that. Now, what's ridiculous, but at the same time very telling, so you have people like Nancy Pelosi say, oh, well, we shouldn't even have debates because Biden should not dignify Trump by having a debate with him because he always acts immaturely or something to that effect. Really? Now we're going to make a case not to have a debate? You know what that tells me, Democrats? You're scared. You don't want Biden to debate Trump because Trump will bulldozer him. That's the reality of it. And why is it that you're scared? Because you just saw what happened these last 4 days and you are quaking in your boots because you realize that the narrative is there, that he has support, that he's able to make a case for his reelection, a coherent one at that, and you don't know how to deal with it. You absolutely don't know how to deal with it. So for those of you who did not watch the convention, you don't have to watch the whole thing. If you want to look it up, there's a few speakers I would recommend. So for day one, there was a lot of interesting figures. I definitely liked Tim Scott. He was the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, only Black senator, a Republican Black senator currently serving. And it was amazing to hear his story about who his family where his family came from, the humble roots. And I think one of the most amazing lines is when he talked about going from picking cotton to Congress. And that was really a wonderful speech on day one. And I honestly would recommend that you watch it. It's worth your while. There were other some great speeches too. I enjoyed Dan Crenshaw's speech, United States Representative from Texas. He was pretty good. For our ladies out there, I think Kayleigh McEnany, who is the White House Press Secretary, she shared a very personal story about her battle with breast cancer and how she took preventive, she decided to undergo preventive surgery, and how Trump was there for her and how human he was in her time of crisis. And that was a really moving story. And I thought it talked about Trump on a personal level, not so much Trump, you know, the professional, the politician, public figure. Another good speech that I definitely would recommend is Joni Ernst, United States Senator from Iowa. She talked about what Trump had done when her state was confronted with mass flooding. And of course, Iowa to many is a flyover country, but I can't emphasize this enough. The telling of the story of how he was there when aid was needed, the telling of the story of how he brought attention to a conflict that was being ignored by the national media. It was very moving, and I think Senator Ernest did a great job presenting that to a national audience. And Mike Pence, as Trump's number two, he was there. I mean, as his Robin to Trump's Batman, he was there, and he spoke on Wednesday, and it was a great speech, and it was a moving one. And finally, if you only watch one other speech, I definitely recommend Melania Trump's speech on Tuesday. That was a great speech. I think she humanized the president. It's always a pleasure to watch her on TV. Such grace, such elegance. So if you have time, check those out. And it was a good convention. I give it an A minus. It was great. The only thing I would have liked to see was probably a little bit more discussion about new policies, like concrete policies. But I understand sometimes that's difficult to do in the more limited setting of television. But otherwise, a solid A minus. Loved it. Loved every second of it. Was interesting to watch. It was, as an American, a very inspiring piece of political entertainment. And I'm excited. 4 more years. Guys, thanks for tuning in. And I can't emphasize this enough. We're so close to the U.S. presidential election. There's 60 days left. And from now to November 3rd, it's going to be a roller coaster of a ride politically. Just prepare yourself, strap that seatbelt in, and be informed. Do your homework, do your research. And if you have not seen the conventions, pull it up on YouTube, compare and contrast. It's not enough for you to get the summary on CNN or Fox News. No, you actually need to experience both so that you can get a more clear picture of what both parties are offering without anybody's filtering system. And that goes for me too. I'm giving you my opinion of the GOP convention, but you may have a slightly different take on it, and that's okay. That is part of the American journey, debating ideas, having it out in the marketplace of ideas. Having differences of opinion is not a bad thing. But always go to the original source. Don't take shortcuts, because when you take shortcuts, you get a watered-down message. And it's important for you to make those really critical determinations now and not closer to the election, because those ideas, those decisions need time to marinate. So I encourage you to go out, seek it out, do your homework. And there's a lot of great content from these speeches. Pull it up, crack a soda, pour a glass of wine over this upcoming weekend, and enjoy and compare and contrast and make decisions about your future, because America's future, it depends on you and your vote. So if you agree with Trump, awesome. If you disagree with Trump, I get it. But do your homework. Don't disagree simply because, hey, the media says Trump is bad. You have to have more concrete reasons for that. And I think doing your homework is necessary, and doing your research will only help you in your ultimate decision, because there's only 66 days left. And it's seems like a long time, but it really isn't. So pay attention, be informed, stay in the loop. Don't lose sight of what's important, and that's America's future. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Remember, we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Our episodes are available wherever you get your podcasts. The three main ones are always Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So check us out there. Subscribe to our show on those platforms. And remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So spread the word. Tell your friends. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.